the Committee on Judiciary, June 2nd, 1977, 3 p.m., room 346.
Here, so the main principle.
All right, let's start with 2011. You have the amendments in front of you. Diana, were you quickly applying the amendments?
Madam Chairman, the amendment is a new section 2 to House Bill 2011. The amendment would say that where a defendant is convicted of an aggravated murder under those first four provisions, that is murder for hire, murder by bombing, etc., those first four categories, where defendant is convicted of those, he'll be sentenced to 30 years without possibility of parole if the court finds that the defendant is not rehabilitatable and shall take into consideration the various factors from A through B in determining whether the person is rehabilitatable. If a person is convicted of aggravated murder under subsection 2 of section 1, that is murder of a police officer, a judicial officer, a juror, witness, etc., or under felony murder, the defendant shall be sentenced to 20 years without possibility of parole if the court finds that the defendant is not rehabilitatable, and in making that determination, again, the court shall consider the same factors. There is a new subsection 3 being added to section 2 to provide that at any time after 2 years from the imposition of that sentence without possibility of parole, the parole board may review that, and the issue on review shall be whether or not the prisoner is capable of rehabilitation. If the person is capable of rehabilitation, if the parole board so finds, they shall lift that phrase without possibility of parole, but the original 30-year sentence or 20-year sentence shall remain. In only that phrase without possibility of parole should be lifted. That's it.
Abrook.
Senator Cavori moves the amendment.
All right. I'm still a little concerned about the witness in a criminal proceeding.
We have not amended that section. We just drafted the new section 2.
If we could do some work if we wanted to on that list, I think.
Judicial officer.
Okay. I think if we can make that 2 on line 14, if we said something about the victim was acting and it was a member of the criminal justice system and the murder was related to the performance of the victim's official duties.
Can we adopt these amendments first?
Oh, yeah.
And then look at that?
I'll move these amendments.
All right. Is there any objection to these amendments? Amendments are adopted. Then, Steve.
Yeah, if we would change line 14. What do we say? If the murder was related to the performance of the victim's official duties in the justice system, you don't need to have all the rest of the life. You start the beginning with the word the murder, the words of the murder.
What does it accomplish?
All these issues about whether somebody was going to have to engross the bill anyway. We might as well clean some language up. We don't have to worry about whether the juror or witness was a witness or were they going to be a witness.
You're suggesting just deleting the victim was one of the following and discussion of that amendment?
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
If the felon, or the prospective felon, comes to the judge's home after he's released from prison and proceeds to murder him, would that be as retaliation for the sentence for which he served time? Would that be related to?
It was related to the performance of the victim's official duties.
Yeah, I think so. Don't you?
Well, certainly it was generated. Typically it was generated. I'm trying to see in the performance of related to Rudolph.
The murder was directly related to the fact that the guy was performing as a judge, and that's official duties in the justice system.
Well, how about this handle the witness situation?
Well,
he would have had to have been a witness or be on the witness stand or be subpoenaed to be a witness. Or
official duties. The witness is not an official.
The way it's worded now, it says the victim was one of the following, and see that the murder was in the victim's official duties, and then they put juror witness in there, so they must feel that a juror witness has official duties, and that's what it's worded
fee.
Now.
Hmm? Getting paid a witness fee.
Yeah. He's sworn in and is performing the function.
You want to delete those words? Is there discussion of that? Is there any objection?
I object. I think it's best to have those listed out.
Well, the amendment is only to delete the victim was one of the following, and then the sentence would read the murder was related to the performance of the victim's official duties.
And then would we be deleting lines 16 through 23?
No, that's not my understanding of the amendment.
That is your understanding?
All those lines would come out.
That's not my understanding. Do you? My understanding, your amendment is only on line 14, which is deleting the words, the victim was one of the following and.
Mm-hmm. And then we would delete from line 16.
Through 23?
Yeah, through
23. Well, I don't favor that.
Well, it doesn't make any difference to me then.
You withdraw your motion?
Yeah.
I defer the motions.
Felony murder.
What line is that on?
27 through 30. But I think that's covered in these other determinations. The circumstances surrounding the murder indicate the defendant has an extremely high disregard for the criminal. In fact, I think these would cover all of this. I don't know how anybody else feels, but I like the individual things better than all these general categories.
Discussion of that amendment, deleting lines 27 through 30.
Senator, may I withdraw the motion and just ask, without making a motion, what the feeling of the committee would be to just leaving aggravated murder defined as a finding that the judge makes based on these? Do people feel strongly about having a list in there?
Then you got an education program for the judiciary. They're used to dealing with these categories.
Categories are, Madam Chairman, those categories are awfully soft, Bob. They're, they look good in newsprint, but they don't look good in the statute.
Judge Beatty, would you come up and comment, please?
Yes, Sam, what's the issue on this?
Why don't you repeat it, please, because I'm not clear myself.
Just looking at the Fourth Amendment for the first time, Senator.
Okay, if I see it two ways to define a person as being an aggravated murderer.
He's now talking about the bill.
The bill itself. Okay, one way would be to define a list of categories. So any person who is a felony murderer, any person who killed a state policeman, any person who is a bomber, these persons automatically are members or aggravated murderers. The other way to define a person as an aggravated murderer would be to look at
the criteria. Your question is it workable to use the criteria?
Rather than the categories.
Yes, I think it's workable. It means that the legislature is vesting the discretion in the sentencing judge to make that decision.
Senator Carson.
Do you think we're going to have any trouble with, let's take the witness. When is a witness performing his or her official duties? For instance, what I'm getting at is I think I know the genesis of that one, and that's where the, quote, mob rubbed out a key witness in Portland, if I recall correctly.
Right.
Okay, a witness really is only in his official, performing his official duties when he's on the stand. And this took place, they didn't come up and capture him out of the courtroom, I don't think. They caught him one evening and rubbed him out. The reason I've succumbed to Stephen's argument is that I think that except for some classifications as a member of the Oregon State Police, or some that are clear, definable, you're going to have a fit trying to make this thing operate. That's why I say it looks good in newsprint. When you write a story, the legislature's come down hard on heinous murderers, but reads one way. But when you're going to have to decide whether a witness was in his... Does it mean the only when he is testifying, or does it mean the courtroom, or...
Well, obviously, Senator, you put your finger on one section that's going to require interpretation, and I suppose one would look at the record of the hearing to interpret it. That's normal interpretation. I think it would be broader than someone just in the act of testifying. It would, I think, be someone who was a person who was had some connection the particular individual who was serving as a juror or serving as a witness would have to be broader than just the act of testifying or the act of serving as a juror. But where that line would be drawn, I cannot tell you.
I think, as I read this, the amendments and the bill together, the process would be this, that a person is convicted of murder. After they're convicted of murder, they'll look and say, do they fall in one of these categories? Then, if they do fall in one of these categories, the judge may place them based on the individual criteria in the aggravated murder.
He's got to go one or two. Doesn't he?
Yeah. It says, after when they is convicted of aggravated murder, the court shall conduct a separate proceeding to determine whether... the court determines it's not being
killed. That's right, it's a double hurdle.
Yeah, it's a double hurdle. I'm really happy the bill as it is.
May I just suggest one thing? Is it necessary to hold a separate sentencing proceeding so long as everyone has adequate notice?
A separate finding rather than separate proceeding would be fine.
Or if you just say a sentencing proceeding to determine, because that could be done at the same time as prior to the imposition of sentence. It would have to be anyway.
I'll move, Madam Chairman, the deletion of the words, deletion of the word separate.
All right. Is there an objection?
I don't object, but it's right here. On the new amendments.
Mm-hmm. I see. Fine.
I got a little lost, though. Why were you going to delete separate?
Because there's no reason to have a separate hearing. It can be part of the same hearing. Or proceeding.
Thank you very much, Judge Bain. Senator Kefouri moves the bill out as amended. Is there a discussion?
Well, the back work other...
Yeah, I think the bill's okay.
Can we discuss the felony murder lines 27 to 30?
Well, I think as long as you've got this a separate finding, that doesn't bother me.
Further discussion.
Well, it says, I think what you could have would be more people in aggravated murder if you took out the bottom portion.
Am I?
Said the defendant shall, four lines from the bottom of the, five lines from the bottom of subsection 1 of the new section 2, it says, the defendant shall be sentenced to imprisonment for 30 years without possibility of parole, release or work release, and so on. Then it says,
that's That's right. There's a two-year review by the parole board.
I'm just wondering, my question is a technical one. I think I understand this. But as far as ambiguity, could that language that says without possibility of parole be found by some appellate court to conflict with, so there was at any time after 2 years language, to find an internal ambiguity or inconsistency?
I don't think that it requires a separate finding. As long as this is just while he's been adjudicated incapable of being rehabilitated. And as long as that adjudication is present, then he cannot be paroled. So we require a separate proceeding to find that he has become rehabilitatable
by the parole board
before, and at that time then he could be eligible for parole.
When?
What?
Anytime? After 2 years?
No, this is any time. It requires a separate hearing and a preponderance of the evidence that he would
after have. 2 years. And all it removes then is the possibility that there is no parole. Then it is possible he still is living with a 30-year sentence. He still has to go through the matrix, which is in the next bill, where the judge sentences him, and it takes four parole board members to overcome that sentence.
So that's not the 2 years he can get out.
No.
He could.
No, he couldn't.
No, he couldn't.
How many years could he get out?
He would get good time.
One-third.
It would depend on the parole matrix.
No. But if he's a murderer, the parole matrix hasn't been developed yet.
No, there is one.
But there is one they're using now. And what would, under present law, the present matrix they're using, a man who is aggravated murderer...
Heinous offense 15 at minimum. For eligibility also.
Okay. So the minimum would be 17 years.
Yeah. And then on the
deal. And then only have to jump in through several hurdles.
Further discussion?
Well, it's not much different than we have now, really.
It's not much different than
it's a showcase situation. It looks good on paper. Now we're going to say, okay, got a minimum sentence 30 years. However, what it really does probably extends the time that they'll serve by two. On the bottom side.
Depending on the people. I would say for most folks, the folks that fall in this category, it'll mean that it would be no change because they won't get out anyway.
Well, now, Ed, if we pass the matrix bill,
yes.
When the judge put the flat 30-year sentence on, it takes four members of the parole board to overrule that.
Yes. They use half of the maximum. It takes 4-1 vote to overrule.
So in 17 years, if you took the optimum guy and you decided he's rehabilitated, then it would take four members of the parole board to overrule the 30-year minimum sentence. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. The difficulty there is that you still have the present law on the books that gives you a mandatory life sentence. You're saying that you got to serve a minimum of 15. Okay. Within that life sentence, the judge in this case would not be able to obviously go to one half of the maximum because there is no maximum, it being life. So the soonest eligibility would be 15. So that's the difficulty you have. When you have a mandatory life instead of a term of years.
You understand this, Paul? What? I'm
trying to
say. Yes. I was just looking at it. I can't remember. Do we have a mandatory minimum on life now, do we?
No, we have no mandatory minimum on life. We have have to give a life sentence for any murder, whether it be aggravated or otherwise.
Okay, today?
Yes.
Okay, and that's eligible, he's eligible for parole the day he hits the slammer. So
that's right.
Looking at it that way, if this does in fact change it to 17 years, we're talking about potentials. You know, there's some guys out there, I agree with that, that are probably never going to get out there, but it technically is possible that the most heinous murderer in Oregon is eligible for parole the day he gets there, based on Oregon law, because they have indeterminate sentences as such, I guess. If I understand correctly, this would make that same person would not be eligible for parole under any circumstances for 15 years if we adopt this one and the matrix. Is that right? Unless they change their 17, unless they change their matrix.
That's right.
Okay. And they're going to be, if we pass our package, they're going to be required by law to have a matrix. They won't be able to decide after a year or two if they don't want a matrix anymore. But will they then have to, when will the matrix that they have become the one that's mandated by law?
The certain technical amendments that when they have adopted by administrative rule can be placed into operation as fulfilling 2013.
Well, this is a big jump then to at least 15 years. 17 years under the current matrix. So we'll have no more people committing murder and being out in 5 years. None.
Well, it's got to be in the aggravated murder category. Yeah. We'll have people still committing murder and being out in 5 years, averaging seven, or whatever that average is.
But
yes.
But the 2 year consideration won't impact until after the 17 years. After the 15.
After 2 years.
Well, so they can't over, if the matrix says...
I'm sorry, that's 2 years first. After you go in the slammer, after 2 years you can be eligible for parole hearing. At that time the parole matrix takes over and says it's 15 years before you can be eligible for parole.
You're only eligible for parole hearing.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that they're going to lift that phrase without possibility of parole.
Well,
they may never lift it. It's just that you're eligible to have the parole board look at whether or not you are still unrehabilitatable.
Well, I think, but that point that Bob Smith brings up, we got to deal in what's the minimum, because that's what the House is going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you have a suggested amendment?
I have a conceptual motion. I would move, Madam Chairman, that anybody convicted of aggravated murder be made to serve a minimum without parole of 30 years.
Still leaving in the board's review after 2 years that he can be reviewed as being
he points out point one or two of the present bill.
Both?
You're talking about section.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. Are you asking about one or two or both with 30 years? Are you
the
talking
heinous?
About 30 and a 20, or two 30s, or what?
Because there are two subcategories of
he
aggravated murder.
Yeah.
Do you want 30 years for both of those categories?
All right, I'll try it that way.
30 years for both categories.
Discussions? Clerk, call the roll.
W. Brown?
No.
Carson?
No.
Kafoury?
No.
Smith?
Aye.
Wire?
No.
Betty Roberts?
No.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Do you have another motion?
Could I ask what the two categories? I see one gives this, section one, sub one, gives these ways that you commit murder that are heinous.
Mm-hmm.
And then two,
justice system.
One of the justice system one went to a 30 year and...
The justice system went to a 20 year.
20 year, and the one where you did it for money and that sort of thing went to life without parole.
30 year.
Opposed?
upon determination of unrehabilitation, non-rehabilitation potential.
Under these?
Under both, yes.
But the way it is here, have we adopted any of this yet?
Mm-hmm. All of it.
Yes,
all
we've adopted
the amendments. Adopted all the amendments, okay.
The motion before us is due pass as amended.
Madam Chairman,
yes.
I'm still not clear on the 2 versus the 15. I gather it's 2 plus 15. After 2 years, the felon can be determined by the parole board to be, in fact, potentially
rehabilitated.
Can be rehabilitated. But under there, in the matrix system, he would not come up for initial consideration until after an additional 15 years. So while he may be clean insofar as rehabilitation after, say, 10 years, he's still got to wait the full 17 before it comes up for first time consideration. So there is a minimum of 17.
Yes.
Madam Chairman, wouldn't it work the other way? Let me ask Diane or Ed. I think it would work the other way. It depends which you start with. You start applying the review first, the matrix first. In other words, if you apply the review first, then they review him at the end of the second year, and they say, okay, you can be rehabilitated. So he starts the rehabilitation thing, the matrix clicks in, and I bet they'd rule that after 15 years, he's eligible, because by the time he hits his 15th year, he's already, that non-parole thing has been lifted, he fits the matrix.
Right.
If they apply the matrix first, and that's a 15 years, and then they look at him, then it'll be another 2 years before they can have
him. That. Under present law, they must look every 2 years at every prisoner, even though they're not going to change the date. Under the present law, they must see every prisoner with every 2 years.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I move that we provide that any person convicted of aggravated murder serve a minimum of 15 years in both categories.
Minimum of 15 years in both categories. Discussion.
Well, we've already got, they're going to serve 30 and 20.
Those are...
417.
Not minimums. Bob is suggesting a minimum.
Would that be in addition to everything else?
No, that's just a minimum.
Well, when I have, you know, I mean, would it be intended to be as a separate added, so that, in effect, you're writing in what we intend to be the matrix, which we understand will be the matrix, is being written in,
right.
Or we strip out all the rest and just put in 15?
Just a minimum.
Okay.
While your matrix
is.
Because you're writing a legislative record, it seems to me it's important that you not be defining what the matrix will be. As the matrix is defined in the statute, the instructions you're giving to the, in 2013, to both the advisory board and then to the parole board, is that they construct one that takes into consideration prior offenses and aggravating and mitigating circumstances. So what seems to me that in this bill, what you are prescribing is a floor for the matrix, but not prescribing
what
the matrix shall be.
Well, we're not even, unless Bob's motion passes, we're not even prescribing a floor. Because if they're, well, a 2-year floor, but after 2 years, the board has to review it. If they determine at that time he is rehabilitatable.
The point I'm trying to get at,
he can be out 2 years.
The point I'm trying to get at is that we do not prescribe a minimum.
I don't think so.
We allow the parole board to either to provide a matrix and...
Sorry.
Well, I don't understand how the matrix works.
Well, this example that Senator Carson just gave would be in the hypothetical situation that we got a parole board that... that set their matrix at 0, or that sometime later the matrix was abolished. As long as we've got a matrix in place...
The matrix they apply above the minimum, is my point.
The motion is for a minimum.
Where would his minimum go in this language that we've got?
Diana, would have to want to clarify. Would you say that
it's a conceptual amendment,
conceptual.
And then it's a minimum, and you can work it in?
All a minor.
Right.
Madam Chairman, the effect of it would be, and I think it's an answer to Judge Beatty, it would be, in this instance, rather than delegating the matrix function to the board, the legislature is setting a 15-year minimum. And they can work their matrix all they want. They can amend it up or down, but that guy's going to do 15 years in the plan.
Well, one way to say that would be to say instead of after 2 years, after 15 years.
Yeah.
That's the effect of it.
Okay.
Sir, just it's the same old bill, just a little different number.
Well, we've adopted some amendments before you got here that are similar to the ones that I showed you down.
I think all we're taking
it won't take long because he's already seen them rubbed out down on the floor.
We have a motion before us. He has just arrived. You saw the amendments on the floor. The motion is for minimum sentences in both categories to be 15 years. The clerk will call roll on the amendment.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Cook.
No.
Zafori.
No.
Smith.
Aye.
Wires.
No.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Motion passes.
Do you move it on? Do we get 5 on this? You got 4. I vote at least 4.
Five.
1, 2,
3,
4.
5. I can still count to 5.
You always have been able to count to 5.
Sometimes even 16.
Yeah, right. Unfortunately.
Can someone tell me what the effect of these combined amendments is going to be? Does the judge have to make a finding?
Yes, he does. It's written into the amendment.
Under A, B, C, or D?
Right.
And then if he makes that finding, then there's a minimum sentence of 15 years?
Yes.
That's correct.
We have been discussing this for the past 40 minutes.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
In effect, what we've done, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is just apply a specific situation which is allowed in the general in another bill.
It's allowed, yes.
Okay, because what could happen, regardless of this bill, and the matrix bill, a judge could sentence a murderer to 30 years in jail. And if he did, then he would have to spend 15 anyway, right?
The sentence is still mandatory life. You've got to give a life sentence.
You have to give a life?
You have to give a life sentence. There's no option in the case of murder. The only controversy is over when one is eligible for parole. The effect of the amendments you just adopted was to make it 15 years before eligibility.
For the two aggravated cases?
For those two aggravating circumstances, that's right.
Now, what are the two aggravated?
I'd like to move, they're the ones listed in the bill under subsections 1 and 2. I'd like to move that we add arson, murder by arson,
it's in
to
there.
E. Where?
On line 28.
It's the second category.
Well, but I want it up on subsection 1 as one of the heinous.
They're all going to be treated alike now under Smith and Smith.
No.
Those are two classes.
No.
This bill is picking up moss as we go.
30 or 20.
Loss.
Well, still 30 and 20 as far as what they originally
said. Okay.
So
if you guys around 20 minutes more, I'd get 30 back. Well, Madam Chairman, the way I look at it, and I think it's in response to Judge Beatty, is we, in effect, just mandated in two aggravated situations the matrix for the parole board.
Isn't the matrix set up by administrative procedure?
But they can't go below 50.
Right, that's
they,
right.
We don't care what you do with your matrix.
We just mandated the lower end.
But in these two ends, the lower end for your matrix is 15
right.
years.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Senator Roberts.
House Bill 2011 to the floor as amended with the past recommendation.
That includes all of these.
Motion is to pass as amended.
All of this plus this plus 15 minimum in both cases.
Clerk call roll.
So, well, discussion.
Just a minute. Walt?
It's my understanding that the matrix running and the 15-year running are going to run concurrently, and it's whichever of the two is the greater.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think that what happens. Okay.
That's about right.
The matrix applies over the minimum 15 years.
In other words, the matrix is not going to kick in until after 15 years.
But 15 will be credited on the matrix. Suppose the matrix comes out that says 20 concurrently.
Right. If, for instance, if they find under their matrix 15 years for aggravated 1 and 2, their matrix matches perfectly what we've just written.
But if they have 20, they're going to have to weigh 5 more.
They're going to have to weigh 5.
If they have 10,
they're
still
going to have to weigh 5.
So they run concurrently, whichever is the greatest.
Does that make you happy, Bobby? Does this bill make you happy? Will you vote for it on the floor?
Quit negotiating with
this guy. I'd like to see a little more discussion, because even though Vern may have come 40 minutes late, I don't want to... You know, we might be able to save 40 minutes of debate on the floor when we're even tireder than I am right now. Do you understand what
we're doing? I'm going to vote no on it.
But you know all you want to know. All right.
Clerk, call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Cook.
No.
Gaffori.
No.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
No.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes.
20 and 12, Madam Chairman?
2012, though, Diana has checked these. She says there's no problem with 2012. Do pass to the floor. Be engrossed. Is there a discussion?
I would like to look at this in 2012. The other ones I have no... I just like to understand this bill before I pass it out to the floor. I might have about 2 minutes to enter an explanation.
Surely. Diana?
Well, this is the restitution bill. It permits a circuit court to order that the defendant may make restitution to the victim if the circuit court finds certain... criteria have been met, and that restitution is a possibility, and that the defendant will be able to make restitution. That permits the circuit court to order the defendant to make restitution.
How does that change from present law?
Right. Under present law, if I may, Madam Chairman, under State versus Stahlheim, only the direct victim may receive restitution.
All right.
This broadens it.
Then if the prisoner is incarcerated, the period for payment of restitution is suspended until after his until he has completed his sentence. Before releasing him on parole, the parole board must, as a condition of parole, require that he pay that restitution that the circuit court judge, way back sentencing, said he has to pay. And the parole board shall set up for, a payment schedule.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Have we coordinated this bill with the Victim's Crime Compensation Bill so it just goes into that fund?
Yes, we have. We did not make specific provision in our bill for restitution, but left it to separate.
Okay.
Bill.
Discussion. I heard Ed Sullivan say yesterday, I'd like to ask a question about the word restitution center when he's talking about the community corrections package. Is that... touch this bill?
Not necessarily. This is part of either the community corrections package or the corrections division budget, which allows them to establish certain centers like work release centers, but for the specific purpose of repaying back victims of crime. So you'd have to bill those.
Okay. My criminal experience has been with juveniles, but in my experience with the welfare system, one of the problems we have in sometimes the government is ending up with people almost belonging to the state. And I'm totally in favor of getting people to pay restitution. But we run the danger of having slave camps type situation. That's a pejorative term. I'm trying to use shorthand talk here.
I understand. I don't think that's true. When the House Committee worked on this, they put some pretty strict criteria on when restitution may be ordered. And the availability of clients' resources, the offender's resources, is one of those criteria.
Because I'm more worried about the person not being able to do it within, like you say, his ability. Yeah. Not to mollycoddle him because you slap his hands and say, sin no more, but I would hate to see us get into a situation where we had people who had very low capabilities and were forever trying, and they just end up being in there, like in a penal situation. Would you think there are safeguards against that?
Yes, because of the hearing and because of the criteria the court is mandated to use in imposing restitution. I think it's all there.
Yeah, Section 2 sets out the criteria.
Question, Ed? The victim thing, are we going to have any trouble with that?
Victim's comp?
Well, no, the victim, the definition of victim. Anybody who suffered pecuniary damages, we look over pecuniary damages. This is not going to be an employer who suffered loss or might have been.
It may well be an employer who suffered loss. What we tried to include was not only the direct victim, but the victim's family.
Gotcha.
And also any third party who may have been injured. So we tried to, and we tried to keep it as tight as possible while getting every conceivable victim.
It's going to clear us.
There's going to be other legislation that's going to cover how to handle these people that are at a restitution center. So if it develops that they're never getting there as far as.
It is not covered in present legislation. And I might say we do have one being run by the Corrections Division right now at Prig Cottage, where the people work in Salem during the day and come back there and spend the night, pay room and board, and also pay back a portion of their funds for restitution. The state's running that. It's a rather successful project.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman?
Yes, Steve.
Is there an opportunity for another hearing later?
I suppose the judge could always modify the sentence. And this is a sentence of restitution.
All right. I'm concerned about a person who, after 10 years in penitentiary, is no longer as capable of earning and living as he was 10 years previously, and still has a sentence from 10 years ago saying that he had to.
The other thing is that's a debt that's dischargeable in bankruptcy.
Oh, it is.
It is not.
Authority, there is authority to the contrary, and I've taken the position that it is not dischargeable in bankruptcy.
Oh, I'm sure.
But
you can have a sentence change. There is a procedure for doing that.
For an order of restitution.
Yes. That portion of the sentence.
Senator Carson.
Member of your county bench, Director Judge Beatty, if I may, a member of your bench and I have had another discussion on restitution before the Stahlheim case came out. Are you really satisfied that, in fact, based on the authority, do we have an Oregon case, Court of Appeals, Supreme Court indicating the dischargeability of restitution
and
bankruptcy?
No, we do not. As far as the only research I've seen has been done by the District Attorney's Office in Multnomah County.
Are they the same ones?
There seems to be authority that they cite, which indicates that a court can treat it as non-dischargeable.
Like?
We do not have an Oregon decision on that.
Well, of course, it'd be federal law, so it would have to come under the intentional tort concept kind of thing, wouldn't it? I mean, the federal government stepped on us so many times when we've tried to.
I do not having done the research myself, all I can say is that there is authority that a state court can make that decision. And I've been advised of that authority. I haven't done the research myself, but I think you should act on the assumption that a court may treat this as a non-dischargeable debt in bankruptcy. This is, of course, a discretionary thing with the court, and that was discussed extensively in the House to avoid many of the situations that you gentlemen are worried about.
Is there a motion on the bill?
I so move. Move the bill out and do pass recommendation.
Discussion. Clerk, call the roll. This is on A and Bush, House Bill 2012.
Oh, yeah.
Brown. Aye. Carson.
Aye.
Kuk. Aye. Kifori.
Aye.
Smith. Wire.
Aye.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
2013.
Right.
Does anybody want to go into this? Are you satisfied that you know what it is?
This is the one that requires
this is
major.
Right.
He got a restitution.
This has Motion, discussion?
What's this prohibits release on parole of aggravated murder until specific term is completed? It just says that this 15-year we've passed now, that they couldn't let them out short of that.
That's right.
Well, then that takes care of the problem that you were thinking hypothetically that it might...
About getting out, walking out the same day?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Anybody that falls in Category 1 or 2 is going to do 15 years minimum.
Further discussion? Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Cook.
No.
Kapori.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
2248.
Yes. Yep. Senator Roberts moves it out. Luke Harris, discussion?
Oh, okay.
Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Kapori.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. 2250. Senator Roberts moves to pass. Discussion. Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Harrison.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Kapori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. 2472. This is a community corrections kind of a bill. You remember Representative Press talked about
It's
his bill to involve the people in the neighborhood where the correction centers would be. Is there a motion?
How does this differ from the present law?
It's just a way to involve citizens in the area because they've had so many problems in locating correctional centers.
Well, they already supposedly have citizens. Now, how does this change it? And it already is the law that on the books involving citizens committee. How does this really change it substantially from
the neighborhood group is going to nominate instead of somebody else?
Citizens advisory committee.
Who's going to decide on what neighborhood group is? What neighborhood group are we going to be talking about? If there is an established group or neighborhood group organization, it shall be asked to nominate the committee. If there is none, the local government has. And who's going to pick? The local governmental body shall appoint from those nominated in Section 1.
This testimony was that they found it very successful and helpful in trying to locate centers.
Well, my concern is who's going to determine what the neighborhood, it may be an excellent idea in theory, but what I'm wondering here is, if we are limiting the appointment of this advisory committee, of members of this advisory committee, to those who have been nominated by a neighborhood group, then how are we going to determine which is a qualified neighborhood group or citizens group and which is not a qualified neighborhood group or citizens group?
There's an elaborate procedure to, in Portland, to recognize them, and some of the less civilized parts of the state that might
to my knowledge, what I'm saying is that we might as well give the right to the Elks to designate. I mean, who's going to say if we weren't restricting the right of appointment to the nominees, then it wouldn't make any difference, because anybody could suggest someone. You don't have to worry about whether it's a legitimate neighborhood group or not. But on the other hand, if you're restricting the appointment to those who are nominated by the neighborhood group, then we ought to be able to figure out who the neighborhood group is.
Have you got any suggested definition of neighborhood group?
Well, I suspect, let me see if we get down here.
You don't want it. 472.
I think it's this section. The local governmental body having jurisdiction over the affected geographic area shall point to the Citizens Advisory Committee persons. I think the problem is probably in from those nominated under subsection 1 of this section. If you took that out, then you would simply have neighborhood groups making recommendations, and then they'd either appoint or not appoint from those recommended, and other people could make recommendations too. But I think the problem is, it seems to me that the problem is to try to say, you're thinking in terms of dealing with cities and counties and so on, where we have an established hierarchy. I mean, these people are elected, or they're appointed and serve certain functions, but here you're just picking them right out of the air. Ed, what I'd like...
This is the best
word. Well, I know it is, but I'd like your comment on this.
Well, I think it's the result of some difficulties the people in North Portland had with the dealing with Corrections Division. I don't think it's Park Road. I think it's something in North Portland where Representative Christ Johns from, as to who should pick it out. And there's some difficulty, I guess, over who composed the neighborhood group, whether or not he stayed with existing neighborhood groups, whatever they are, or whether or not there's some process for choice or who represents that neighborhood. This bill is an attempt to address it. I do not recall the debate in the House Judiciary Committee, but I do know that that was the concern registered by Representative Crest.
Well, I think it's too vague and indefinite, and I suggest, Madam Chairman, that maybe we have a representative. I'd like to have their ideas, but I just think that this is too vague.
It's a way to allow the local people to flack the...
Who are the local people? That's what I'm saying.
How neighborhood organizations are formed.
God, they could be formed anyway.
Somebody gets mad about something, and they form a group, and they give it a name, and and then if...
This would be called a posse.
Let me use an analogy. We have this law, which is probably unconstitutional, but no one challenges it now, which says that if I should die, which is possible,
we hope not.
A meeting of all of the Democratic Precinct Committee men and women is to be called in my senatorial district. They will prepare a list of 3 or 5 people that they'll vote on and submit to the county commissioner. Then is the duty of the county commissioners to fill the vacancy resulting from my death from this list. Now that's kind of a bastard riot, really, because I think that it's halfway between law and nothing. But at least it's an established Democratic Party which has an organization and they're elected and all this sort of thing. And so we can say, okay, this is the Democratic organization or the precinct committee persons who are elected from Senate District 12, and we know who they are. There's no question about their credentials. They're elected, certified, elected, etc. Now that's one thing. But here we're talking about neighborhood groups. A neighborhood group could be any 3 members of the Ku Klux Klan getting together out in East County. In our more conservative area, you find the East County Ku Klux Klan, which we thereby say is the neighborhood group where everything is discretion.
Couldn't happen. That's in the north part of the
county. Well, wherever. And so you have this neighborhood group, and that day you're going to have a dozen neighborhood groups. And who's going to decide? If you want to have someone considered, you've got to obviously form a neighborhood group.
They can all nominate. What's the problem?
But no, but you see here on line 15, the selection can only be from those nominated under subsection 1. So if you're not nominated, you can't...
I think we can solve your problem, Vern, by taking that word established and defining it on line 10. Whatever the word is important, there are certain groups that are they're exclusive. If you're in, there's an Hosford neighborhood group, and they can't have another group in the neighborhood that, because there's only one official certified by the city neighborhood group in that area.
All right, what if we said something, I'm interrupting
officially
you.
Certified or something
by
like that.
By a city or a county.
Fine.
Okay, well, if there is an established citizens group or neighborhood group organization in the affected area established pursuant to ordinance of the city or county
formally recognized
established or recognized as an official body by the city or county in which it is located. Ta-da. Now that's
move that amendment. Okay.
You heard the motion. Discussion. Is there any objection?
I object to Senator Cook's analogy that included Don Clark participating in choosing his successor.
Hearing no objection, the amendment passes. Is there further amendments or is there a motion? Can I move it? Do pass as amended. Discussion? Quick call roll.
Debbie Brown.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Kefouri.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. 2309.
Can I get to 523 after this one, Debbie?
You know, I've got a couple more, and then I'll try to...
Which one are we going to now?
2309. You can read it. I can't.
Oh, that's a... Yeah, I think that's a good bill. It's Otto's bill. I talked to the same psychologist that he did, and I can't remember his name, but he lives over in Troutdale.
This is Dr. Powell?
Dr. Powell?
Powell, I think, is the...
I think that's his name.
Yeah, I met him.
Okay, and what he said seemed to make a lot of sense to me. He said it was his theory that, and I don't know if we've had any opposition to it, his theory that if it were required that before a person were paroled that he be given an examination by a qualified psychologist, that he believed that many of these people who've been released and later turn out to cut people up into little pieces and that sort of thing wouldn't have been released. And really, I mean, he's talking about the Bowles case and others that if, I mean, some of these cases, they don't give them psychological or examination.
2309 out, Newt Bass.
Right.
Discussion.
Fiscal impact of spillage.
Well, it has some, but there aren't too many people being let out on.
I suggest there might be too many.
Well, I think it's better to know if there's going to
go out and set up
someone.
It doesn't require
that. It doesn't require. May require any prisoner being considered. Yeah, it's not mandatory that it be done in all of them.
Court call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Kefouri.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
No.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. 3041.
Do you like shrinks? I like shrinks. Some of my best friends are shrinks, but still.
3041.
Right. 3041. Why can't we have bigger tabs so that you could read them?
And we have accountants for
This is a
move.
Gun control bill?
Yeah.
Gun control bill.
Don't leave us, Wally.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we better get Betty Roberts.
Harriet, we got Betty Roberts, please.
A call of the committee.
Is this
the
one?
You got the gun?
Yeah. Minimum terms of imprisonment for felonies committed with firearms.
It's not nearly as bad as it could be, but it's...
you can say that for just about everything we've done here. Especially today. Funny, I gave a speech on it. I just said it.
Very delete the first offense manager.
Really,
no,
keep...
And it says so, and you've got a second chance. 5 years. Okay. Next time.
Next time, the first one's free.
The first one's free.
Got a first buy, first shot.
Oh,
first shot's free.
With me, huh?
What's the argument against?
First shot for this or first shot if you have
somebody? If you have a gun with you.
What's the argument against minimum sentences for people with firearms?
Well, what about trespass? It says any crime during the commission of a crime. Is trespass a crime?
Sure. Criminal trespass? It used to be. I think we still have it.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Hunting, then, if you trespass, that would be a criminal trespass.
Well, this is on felonies, so...
Yeah, trespass is not a felony.
This all just relates to felonies. What is?
Hopefully you got walking across the farmer's field with your trusty mice and gets a felony.
No.
Boy, it is in some parts of this state.
Yeah. It's just
you
killed.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there are no mandatory minimums of law.
But it says minimum terms for felonies, but up above it says use of a firearm during commission of a crime, and if trespass is a crime,
it says use or threaten to use, it isn't just carry.
Trespass is $100 fine.
Yeah, that's not a deletion from the original bill, was the possession.
Well, if you look at lines 8 through 11, prior to sentencing upon a felony conviction, the court shall consider whether or not the person used a gun in the commission of the crime, referring to the felony of which they were convicted. And then it keeps referring to the crime, so it would relate back to felony conviction.
I'd move to delete on line 29 the words after the first conviction. For
motion.
Such felonies.
The motion is to delete on line 29.
You must make it first one 5 years.
First bite?
Upon the conviction of such felony and then omit committed after the first conviction for such felony 5 years. The effect is to make the minimum sentence for the first time?
Yeah.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Just for ease of getting this bill passed, this was, you know, one of several long, hassled floor fights in the House on that issue. And this is the one that won.
Well, I'm not in the House.
I understand that. I'm just saying that if we're concerned with getting the package over and finished.
Well, I was made the motion to see if I could hear the argument.
Okay.
I asked for before, the argument against doing it the first time. Seems to me that if you don't find a gun in your hand by accident, you could get drunk and kill somebody with your car, and you could argue about how accidental that was. But
people have, you know, if you ask what the percentage of folks out there in the penitentiary who committed their act while under the influence of alcohol, you find it's enormous.
Yeah.
Roughly half. So that.
But
you get the same kind of situation.
But the decision to have a gun around is a fairly sober decision.
Yeah, I know.
I grew up in a house that probably had 40 guns in it. Handguns, ex-murder weapons, et cetera, et cetera. But there was a great awareness in our family what those were all about. And I don't, you know, it's a tangible object.
What?
You can get it out of there. You can get rid of it.
Yeah, but people don't. People do have them around for self-protection.
Right. They're cowboys carrying them around. They think they're cute carrying them around all over Portland.
There's a lot of folks that have them for self-protection. They don't anticipate using them in the commission of a felony.
But they'd have to be proved they've committed a felony.
Ed said there's 100 walk around that are on probation that would be in the slammer.
100 walk around on probation.
100 people a year.
That seems to me like maybe 100 people that ought to be in the penitentiary.
100 what?
100 people that are not put in the penitentiary for the first conviction of committing a felony with a firearm. And it's decided that because of the person and the mitigating circumstances and so forth, you ought to
put them on probation.
Just to review, it's my understanding, Jan, that you essentially want to delete the first bite and make the 5 years applicable to the first crime with a weapon. Is that correct?
Yeah.
It's my understanding from what Steve said that in the house they wanted to give the gun toter one bite.
Right.
Well, there's no question that one of the first time you're automatically involved free.
Is trespass a crime?
Yes, criminal trespass in the first degree is a Class A misdemeanor. Criminal trespass in a second degree is a Class C misdemeanor. Both misdemeanors. But criminal trespass can be a crime. Or
a crime includes misdemeanors.
But this
is
for crime. Oh, yes.
Am I reading this wrong? I see it's a felony, though. Felony convictions, yes. Which the court finds.
Line 27. Yeah, your amendment goes to them.
Well, what I'm saying is that this whole stuff that my amendment is dealing with is only convictions of felonies, which trespass is not a felony. So we wouldn't be giving somebody a mandatory minimum for a misdemeanor committed with a firearm along. Right?
I'm not convinced that's true.
As I understand it, it's a felony. Use of a firearm in the commission of a felony.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then I think your amendment is not well taken. Unless you're saying, do you want to give somebody 5 for the first time with a felony?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. But my point is, it's only with a felony.
It's only a felony right now, the way the bill reads, as I understand it.
Well, my amendment would leave it only with a felony, but it would just say...
Sorry.
We couldn't have the first fight. Now, could I ask Ed how many people voted for this minority report number 1, which apparently is close to my amendment? 31? No. Minority report number 1.
That's Sandy Richards' minority report. That was 14 only voted for that one. Minority report number 2 was the one that was adopted. It got 31 votes. And, of course, the majority report was not voted upon.
What was that?
That was the engrossed.
A engrossed version. I have it there. 2-5-10 life.
It just seems to me that we have to tell people it's time to disarm. I've heard over and over that there's an alarming increase in people that are carrying guns, some of them legitimately for self-defense, but a lot of them are carrying them around because it's fashionable. And, you know, the citizens are arming themselves.
Does that have any impact on this one?
Huh?
Further discussion on the amendment. Put Paul
the inoperable law. I'm having difficulty with having that in there on line 10.
Well, we're just moving on my amendment.
I appreciate that. But
what is it on line 10?
It means that your amendment, if a person has an
unloaded
firearm, he gets 5 years.
Gets nothing the first time, 5 the second, 10
no,
the third.
No, his amendment is 5 the first
time. 5.
We're talking about the amendment.
On line 10 it says operable.
Or inoperable.
Operable or inoperable.
On what line of which page?
10.
Well, maybe this is the old bill, huh?
We're looking at the one in the book now.
Oh, I see. Someone has...
I'd like to include in my amendment to take out the or inoperable.
How about separating the motion? I vote for one without the other. How about separating them? Why can't he move his and see if it passes, and then you
move his to delete.
Well, let's move the or inoperable first.
We're going to move the or inoperable first. The motion is to delete or inoperable. Discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Safari.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Now I move the
deletion.
Deletion as the first conviction for such felony.
Discussion.
Madam Chairman,
yes.
It seems to me that you just got through.
Let me advise these people that I don't think we're going to get to any of the bills except the land board's bill and Senator Thorne's if he shows up. Where are the land board bills?
Well,
they're not on my agenda.
They should be. I'm looking through the second page of your agenda.
I only have one page.
Well, it should be two pages, public hearing on Senate Bill 1106.
Yeah, 1106, 1107 are on the shorter agenda.
Okay. Well, you probably will not get to any other bills except 1106 and 1107, possibly 806. Yes.
I'd like to hear Judge Beatty. He had something, I think, that came out of here about the opera going off over what. We're making a decision based on no hearing on this, and I think it's fair to do it.
Well, we've already voted on the operable and the inoperable. You want to hear from him now after our vote?
I would appreciate this.
All right, Judge Beatty.
Madam Chairman, I'm not expressing any view on the policy matters that you're considering. The problem that I simply called to Senator Kapuri's attention is the fact that we have a serious problem at trial now with establishing whether a gun is operable, particularly in a case where an armed robbery has been committed and the person is identified afterwards and the gun, particular gun, isn't recovered. So you create, you're going to create, if you delete the inoperable, you're going to create two categories of people, the people who are caught red-handed with the weapon so that the police can test fire it, and people who are caught, identified, and convicted. But there is, because the gun has been disposed of, there is no method for checking it. Now, if it's a matter of policy, you want to leave that in, that, of course, is a policy decision. But it does create two different categories that are hard to justify in terms of the whether a sentence is mandatory or not.
Senator Wyers.
Would it be a matter of plea bargaining if we say we put the inoperable back in and then had this law with this mandatory minimum that might go into effect, if the DA sees that this was a cleverly made imitation, would he be more apt to charge?
No, there's a definition of firearm up above.
Firearm is defined. The purpose of the manner in which this particular statute is drafted is intended to eliminate the matter of plea bargaining. It's probably the only statute that eliminates plea bargaining.
I agree.
For that purpose. Are there further questions of Judge Beatty? Thank you, Steve.
Madam Chair, I move to reconsider the motion by which we just.
The motion is to
further amend by adding back in.
Move to further amend by adding back in.
All right, to add in or inoperable. Clerk, call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Cook.
No.
Safari.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wires.
No.
Betty Roberts.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
No. The motion passes. Now,
Madam Chairman?
Yeah. I think Senator Wires had the Second Amendment. You want the first conviction mandatory, is that right?
Yes, I move the deletion of the words on lines 29 and 30 after the first conviction for such felony.
All right, is there discussion of the motion?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Cook.
Well, this is both on the motion and the bill. Seems to me you've already adopted a policy in another bill setting up a series of aggravated crimes, and we're going to give them minimum sentences. I cannot understand. I just don't believe that statistics will demonstrate that this is going to be the kind of thing that's going to convince a would-be murderer to use a cleaver instead of a handgun in order to commit the murder with. And in other words, you're the minimum sentencing. If you're going to have minimum sentence, there ought to be really, well, I know that's not really the way people act in the legislature, but ideally there'd be some relationship between the minimum sentence and what you expect people to do. And this is really getting down to the point of how many angels can stand on the point of a pin. First of all, it's very doubtful whether the minimum sentence has any deterrent effect at all. Now you're going to say that if you kill them with a cleaver or a butcher knife or a good long blade, that you're not necessarily going to have any minimum sentence unless you get stuck under the aggravated murder law or aggravated murder law. But on the other hand, if you shoot them and get convicted, then Zambo, you're under the minimum murder law. I guess specifically thinking about here, and I think it's frequently the first murder, and as I understand it, murderers have pretty good parole records. And this bill, under the amendment now, bad enough under the first one because of the irrational singling out of the gun rather than the butcher knife, but now here you're going to say that every crime of passion, that there's going to be a minimum sentence if he uses a gun. That doesn't make much sense to me. I mean, yeah, we know we're going to run short of jail. Most of these people who use that gun the first time, they do it because it's handy, probably without premeditation, probably in anger, and certainly that class of people generally, the fact that we say that the first time you shoot someone, you're going to get a minimum sentence is very unlikely that they'll even know about it in the first place, that they'll have any idea that there's any such law hanging out there. They all know if you shoot someone, it's a crime. But I wager that very few of them are going to recognize this fine distinction of whether you do them in with a butcher knife or with a Saturday night special. So I just think it's unrealistic, and I think it's poor penal policy, not to mention how it's discriminating against people who use guns. That doesn't really bother me, but I don't think it makes sense.
Madam Chairman?
Steve?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea for people to have guns in their homes, because mostly the people that use them on is their husbands or wives or the guy who's just made a mad. There isn't some problem with those of them. If your husband or wife got mad at you,
I didn't realize
and
what
took your gun and shot at you and missed you, that's a felony, and it's automatic 5 years. It looks like it's an armed robbery bill, but there are other people besides armed robbers that use guns. And if you're just going to say bang, first time, 5 years, it doesn't have any rational relationship to, as Senator Cook said, to deterring a kind of an effect. Now, if you say the second time or the third time, I think people get the lesson after one.
Yeah. Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I'm not as interested in the deterrent effect as I am in having a person off the street right away the first time who uses a weapon. I've handled weapons since I was very, very small. Killed animals bigger than humans by the time I was 10. I've watched my dad sleep with a gun by his bed since I was small, because there were people who were at large that he'd prosecuted. And I think that weapons, guns, have a very specific meaning in our culture. I think people know what they are. We're not talking about murder here. We're talking about all felonies committed with a weapon, with a firearm. And I do think, as far as the deterrence effect is concerned, that a lot of people on the street would hear. Now, Senator Cook's argument is they start carrying meat cleavers instead. I doubt that. But I think they would stop carrying guns as much. I don't care if we zap them after just once. I think we should, for the sake of other people.
Previous question, Madam Chairman.
Question's been called for. Is there any objection? Question then is before us. It is to zap them the first time. Call the roll.
Deputy Brown?
No.
Carson? Cook?
No.
Safari?
No.
Smith?
Zappo. All right.
Wired? Betty Roberts?
No.
Madam Chairman?
No.
Well, we're going to vote no. I'm going to vote no.
Let's get a minority.
I move wherever we are to the floor.
You got one.
3041, Minority Report 2A and Gross move to the floor.
We'll find pass. Vote is one.
I don't know.
I move the substitution of... No, I won't do that.
It was by. We hear about it after the first time in court. We'll tell them all though. First time in court.
They commit one felony with a gun. We'll tell them how we really mean it. Next time we're going to get tough.
Jared, it doesn't say that automatically if you use it the first time that you're not going to go to jail. It just allows some discretion.
But he just said there are 100 people running around.
Okay, there are probably 100 people who ought not to be in jail.
Well, I would disagree with that.
If you're a bad shot, you won't go to jail. If you're a good shot...
No, you have to explain... What you have to do to not go to jail is convince them you're really sorry, that you could get a job, that you basically had a nice upbringing, and that you probably won't do it again because you're so awful sorry. I think.
Give you another chance.
Well, in that case, no.
But it's traitor, crooked arrow. What are we waiting for?
Carson.
Why?
Because they need his vote.
Is he going to vote aye?
Where did he go?
Five. He got up and left, which indicates he was going to vote no.
That's the time I gave him.
I think his leaving indicated he didn't want to vote aye on him. Minimum, the first time. So he's probably eye on the bill as it is. We have to have more debate when he gets here.
No.
Yes, we do.
Motion is.
We lost the motion.
Do pass on House Bill 3041.
By you.
Is that right?
No, not really. It's just two of us.
Oh, there would have been three.
We're going to vote no on the bill now so we can try and get that back in.
Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
No.
Cook.
No.
Safari.
No.
Smith.
Well, this is a different kind of a situation.
Everything that I had expected.
Aye. Now, this is a different situation. There's something in it.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Wired?
No.
Betty Roberts?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
No. Bill fails.
Sometimes
I just don't know which side you people.
I move the substitution of House Bill 3041, Minority Report Number 1.
Is that the same thing we just
did? 3041.
Do you want to explain that? Yeah. 3041, Minority Report 1, is the Sandy Richards report. And what it does was to delete the words were inoperable and to make no penalty as the bill you had before you originally as it passed the House the first time, 5 years the second time, and 10 years the third time. And then on its left on the matrix. That's the difference between that bill and the bills before you.
That's what? 2 years the first time?
No. Nothing the first time. Five the second, 10 the third.
How about the majority?
Yeah, the majority, of course. Let me pass out the majority.
Shut up and sit down.
Yeah, let me see the majority report. This is more. The
majority report is.
Oh, wait, you have a second minority report for two majority reports.
The majority report was. Left the words or inoperable in there and made it 2, 5, 10 life.
That's why.
Just the rules.
All right. Cinder Wires moves the majority report.
B.
Who sponsored it?
The majority.
Who sponsored it?
the voodoo buyers Gilmore.
Majority of
all my motion. Another day.
Did you vote, Carson? I just said, substitute the minority report.
Two-year minimum for the first try.
No.
Kafari?
No.
Smith?
Aye.
Wires?
No.
I'm Brown.
Robert?
I'm Brown.
You vote no. Madam Chairman?
No.
Bill Fells?
No. What's the next motion?
How's it going,
Mr.
Baker? Not bad. Take another vote on our basic bill. Would you entertain a motion?
Yeah. Move House Bill 3041 to support the dispatch recommendation.
Ingross.
Minority.
Minority 2, Ingross.
All right, let's review that. The first one's free, and the second one is what, Diana?
Five.
We're back to the minority report number 2, the one that passed the House.
Yeah.
Right, about the no minimum mandatory first time, after on the second conviction, 5 years. Third conviction, 10 years. After that, it's 30 years. So it's 5, 10, 30.
Inoperable.
Clerk, call roll.
Well,
Debbie Brown.
Aye.
Carson.
Nope.
Cook.
No.
Gaffori.
No.
Smith.
Aye.
Wires.
No.
Robert.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
No. Senate Bill 1106.
We
got
nothing else.
Does the river's movements over the last 100 years change,
leave the beds in state ownership, or perhaps the channels that have been used to be part of the bed and now are high and dry, would they still be state owned? Or what's the ownership of these abandoned channels?
Well, the thrust of it is you want more time to do the survey.
Do all that time, does it automatically end up that the state loses?
No.
No.
Now, the only one comment I want to make is on the navigability, we're asking for an extension of time, another 4 years to complete the study. We can't change anybody's property titles or anything else, but we want to present you with the facts that at the end of the period of time.
You want another 4 years to make the study, now?
The study.
This doesn't affect the navigability one way or another.
No, it does not. The abandoned channel one, what we're asking is two things, to take off the time limit, because we have to complete the navigability studies before we can essentially decide whether the abandoned channels...
1106 asked for more time. Does anyone want to vote no on it? 1106 passes then. 1107 is a method for holding public hearings to determine... What is the thrust of it, Bill?
Besides the study, the division had to go through a very complicated process, including a contested case hearing with the property owners to present them with the facts and information of the study. And I think this committee, as it was dealing with hearings officers and a number of other things, recognizes the complexity of a contested case hearing. Well, if you're holding a hearing with the property owners along the Willamette River, there's about 1,000 property owners involved. How do you hold a contested case hearing with them? It's just a practical matter, impossible.
Who wants to vote no on 1107?
I'll move it out.
Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye. What's the effect of it?
Harrison.
Aye.
Cook.
Aye.
Kafari.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wired.
Yeah. Go on.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
For the record, could I give what appropriate notice means?
Leave the record on.
Before you leave, can I talk to you while?
Whatever kind of notice appears, is newspaper, direct contact, any kind of notice that's under the rules for giving notice to people.
Oh, okay.
It varies. LCD has some. Everybody jumped into the act.
Right. Thank you.
But you actually know the property owner. You could give the individual property owner.
We may allow the individual property owners via the tax records.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't always perfect because the banks pay taxes in some cases and some of the rest of it. But we do our very best on that. But we also notice other ways.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I can already go on the record. I just want to let you know I would have voted aye. I don't want to think I burdened the
Yeah.